everyone. This is Mike McElhenney with the Integral Leadership Collaborative, and I have a great honor to be interviewing my good friend, great friend of a lot of us here in the Integral community, Brett Thomas. Brett, if you don't know already, he's the co-founder of Stegan Leadership Institute. He served as the managing director of the Business and Leadership Center of the Integral Institute, currently serves on the steering committee of the Integral Leadership Collaborative, and he's also writing a book on integral leadership with Russ Volkman. So, Brett, hey, welcome, buddy.
It's great to talk to you, Michael. Looking
you
forward
too,
to the conversation.
Yeah, me too. You know, Brett, you know, I'm a huge fan of yours. You're an awesome guy. We have a lot of fun together. And yet, you do so much stuff. You know, you're just involved in integral leadership in so many different ways, from Stegan to our Integral Institute colleagues to this thing, man. I'm so glad to be with you right here. So what do you got going on? What's interesting? What's exciting to you?
Well, it sounds like a broken record, but I'm really excited about integral leadership.
Hey, surprise, surprise.
I just, you know, feel such a calling to be involved with integral leadership, excited about the book, excited about, you know, what's happening at the Stegan Leadership Institute. We have, we just love our work, and we've got great clients, and the results that they're getting, and, you know, going through the 52-week really intensive first-year integral leadership program, and then they come into the alumni community after that, and they continue to meet with us and learn and develop as well. And that's, you know, it's almost all CEOs, so it's a pretty interesting group of folks, and you know, it's just incredibly rewarding work. Leadership affects everything. Leadership affects nonprofits, NGOs, you know, for-profit corporations, your family, your community. No matter what you're trying to do, if it involves human beings, if you have really effective leadership, you really understand people, and you know what people care about, and you know what people want, and you know where people are in their own growth and development and who they're becoming. And if there's a form of leadership that can take that into account adequately and get those results in a way that's more sustainable, because it balances task and relationship. It balances and integrates all these different types of worldviews that come into play and all these different energies and motivations that people have. And they all need different styles of leadership. And integral leadership is this broad container, like integral medicine and integral psychology and integral sustainability and integral ecology and all these other areas. Integral leadership is a container big enough and an approach to leadership comprehensive enough to, in my view, account for and incorporate all the other styles of leadership that came before it, and yet in an elegant way that appears to be teachable, judging by the results that we're getting and other of our colleagues that are going to be at this conference that also teach other versions of integral leadership all over the world are going to be speaking about. Judging by the results that integral leadership is getting, I think it's incredible leverage. I think the reason that I find this idea of integral leadership so compelling, Michael, you know me well enough to know that I'm fond of provocative ideas. And yeah. There's two provocative ideas that I'm hoping we have time to chat about today. And the first one is, I actually believe, and now some people may think I'm crazy with what I'm about to say, and it wouldn't be the first time that I've been called that. I believe integral leadership is Archimedes' lever.
Hmm. Tell me what you mean.
Well, you know, most of us are familiar with the, you know, Archimedes is often paraphrased as saying, if I had a lever long enough, I could move the world.
Uh-huh.
And I think historians quote him as saying, give me a lever long enough and a fulcrum on which to place it, and I shall move the world.
Hmm.
I have had the privilege of, you know, working with a lot of folks over a lot of years. In fact, the last 11 years, we've been teaching this integral leadership program at Stegan. And And, you know, when we were at Integral Institute, we're teaching this to a lot of folks that have an integral worldview and that in many ways are at these, you know, very latest stages of psychological maturity that we sometimes call the integral stages. But what we do at Stegen is we're working with business people. And we're working with people that are, you know, they're not all at the latest stages of development. In fact, if we use action logics, we're working with a lot of leaders that come in that are at diplomat stages of development and expert stages of development, certainly achievers. You expect to have a lot of achiever action logics with CEOs and C-suite executives. And, you know, occasionally we have some individualists come through here, and they're kind of like, you had me at hello, you know. And rarely do we have some, perhaps people that we meet through the integral community and so on that come through our academy that are already, you know, at strategist level. So, but it's experts and achievers and some diplomats. And the reason that I think that integral leadership is Archimedes' lever is if we can teach this style of integral leadership that we teach at the academy, you know, if we can teach experts and achievers, people that are not yet self-authoring, much less self-transforming, to use Bob Keegan's terms, to do these, to use this approach to leadership, this approach of self-awareness, that these approaches to communication, develop these skills. And the kind of results that I've been seeing for the last 11 years and our team has been seeing, it's nothing short of extraordinary. And I really do believe, and I think, you know, time will tell in many years before we'll know for sure, so this is a hypothesis. I think integral leadership is Archimedes' lever in the sense that I think it might turn out to be perhaps the invention that humans have come up with that gives the human race the most leverage. I'm wondering what you think about that.
Well, you know, at first I thought maybe you were overstating it, but, you know, I'm thinking really you're talking about an invitation to people, no matter where they are, to step into their leadership. You know, when you think about how leadership is framed from a first-tier perspective, they're always talking about this mixture of competencies and characteristics, really highly elevated, that people would struggle to match up to.
Right.
You know, when we talk about integral leadership, we're talking about truly holding the capability from where you sit, right? So if you're at diplomat, then bringing full capability to your functioning at diplomat.
Right.
You be the best darn diplomat, the healthiest manifestation of that particular stage, and anybody at diplomat can step up to that level of responsibility, can step up to that level of competency. They don't have to aspire to the highest stages of every single, you know, developmental team. They don't have to step up to every single level of every single competency. It's not an idealized world. What it is really framing it from where they sit. That's what I'm hearing you say when you talk about a lever.
Yeah, for sure. I this is why I'm so also excited to see more leadership and perhaps some integral leadership emerging in our integral community. And this is something that you know that I care very, very deeply about. And I'm really moved and really inspired to see and recognize so much initiative and even entrepreneurship, and just the willingness to take all of our academic books on integral theory that we all love, and it's one of the most cherished possessions we all have in our homes.
Sure.
If there were a fire, it would be get the kids, the pets, the photo albums, and the Wilbur books. You know, but we have our theory and. And it's we love it. I mean, it's wow. You know, it's it means so much to us. But setting that aside, and going, okay, what needs to be done in the world? You know, look around and say, what's really happening?
Right.
And you know, and what is important in this situation? And what's needed? And then being able to use all that we've learned and all these perspectives and all these lenses and frameworks and so on, then to arrive at the answer to the third question that I like to pose when we teach integral leadership, which is, what's the most helpful action I can take?
Mm-hmm.
You know, given what my interpretation is based upon my awareness of what's really happening and based upon my discernment and my judgment and my experience and my analysis, and then come back to, what's the most helpful action I can take as a leader? And it doesn't matter if you don't need to be a CEO, as you were saying a minute ago, and I think this is very, very important. And Russ and I have been working on this book, and we've been really reviewing, you know, the history of leadership theory and really looking at how people think about this idea of leadership. And there are many kind of funky orientations toward leadership, you know, the character, you know, approach to leadership. A leaders are born, and it's this special person. And it's like, you know what? And then I coach CEOs for a living. That's my day job, is coaching CEOs, and I've been doing it for 11 years, and I love it. And, you know, you don't have to be a CEO to be a leader. I see people step up. You know, one of my first teachers used to say almost 25 years ago, the leader is the one who takes responsibility.
Yeah.
And I see it everywhere I look. You know, someone who has the guts and the love, and they care enough to step out and just to take responsibility, to make something better, if that's my church, my community, my neighborhood, you know, and then there's this other school of thought, you know, of course we see this coming from the traditional literature as well, and the traditional mindset or worldview, which is the leader is the person with the title, right? Positional leadership. And some people think of leadership that way. And
right.
And so on. So I'm so fascinated by, first, the phenomenon of leadership, and I have been for as long as I can remember. And then second, what we're calling integral leadership, but to be precise, integrally informed leadership. A person who's conceiving, exploring, either doing leadership or supporting leaders in a role or a moment of leadership, or supporting people who are in the roles of leaders, that, you know, integral leadership would be, I either am integrally informed, I'm a student of integral, or perhaps, and this is rare, but we see it, never heard of Ken Wilber or any of the other integral authors and advocates, but have an integral worldview. Or perhaps even more rare, have matured over decades to the point that they're at these, what we call the integral stages of development. I just like to refer to them as the latest stages of development, of psychological maturity. So wherever it is, whether you're a student, whether you have an integral worldview, or whether you literally are at an integral stage of development, and you're considering and engaging leadership from that, that's what I would call integrally informed leadership, integral leadership for short. And I think that's just endlessly fascinating.
Oh, absolutely, Brett. I think that, you know, your excitement shows through in everything that you've done in regard to integral leadership. Think for a moment just about the experiences that I've shared with you in the Stegan practice, where you have really grounded this idea of integral leadership into a number of core practices. You know, and I think that you have the gift of being able to translate complexity into these practices of integral leadership. Tell me a little bit about, and tell us a little bit about how these practices came about, and which ones you think are ultimately very, very critical to this idea of integral leadership.
You know, we've been studying leadership theory for a long time, and to me, leadership is application. It's real world. I mean, there are theories about leadership, but the phenomenon of leadership arises in doing things, in engaging. And then there's this idea that's so interesting, leader development. And what's so fascinating to me is most of the folks involved in leader development don't approach it the way we do at Stegan and many of our friends in the integral community, which is more of a practice-based approach. Many, if you look around about what people are doing with leader development and you look historically what corporations and organizations have done and you read the books on leader development, it's very odd because they send people to 5-day seminars.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm a martial artist, and I can't imagine going to a 5-day seminar to learn kung fu or taekwondo.
Mm-hmm.
That's an absurd idea. Or jiu-jitsu. One of our coaches who'll be at the conference is a world-class jiu-jitsu instructor and MMA instructor, still owns a dojo there in Dallas and is one of our, you know. And it's like, really? Would you go to a 5-day seminar and to learn, you know, how to interact with people in a way that you could engage in martial arts and not get hurt and sort of be able to defend yourself in the case of a self-defense kind of orientation? It's absurd. Well, leadership is at least as complex as martial arts. And I would argue that leadership is far more complex than learning a martial art. So how in the world, how do people think that you can learn leadership in a seminar?
Yeah.
And so that was when Rand and I started Stegan 11 years ago, that was a commitment we made. We said we're not in the entertainment business. And if people want to hire us to come in and give a motivational speech, we just tell them, you know what, take your money and take your people and go to Six Flags or go to Disney World or something. Go to an amusement park. You know, do some bonding. That's cool. But we're not interested in that. And so 11 years ago, we said, what would it look like to do leader development in a way that would actually develop leaders? And so we know from Bob Keegan and from all the work from the developmentalists that there's a subject-object move, that there's kind of two kinds of development. There's horizontal development where you're adding more and more information and skills to your existing worldview, your existing meaning-making system. And then there's vertical development, which is, of course, you're really growing that container, expanding the mind so that the meaning-making system itself becomes an order of magnitude more complex. In order for vertical development, there has to be a subject-object move. There has to be a disidentification from your previous way of making meaning. The subject of one level becomes the object of the subject of the next level. And so we wanted to create a program that would create the possibility of horizontal development and vertical development. One of the things we do at Stegan is we translate everything into kind of business speak, if you will, the orange dialect or the modern worldview dialect. And so we call horizontal development acquired learning, and we call vertical development adaptive learning. So we just frame it as learning. There's acquired learning, you just get better at your current level, and there's vertical or development, which we call adaptive learning, where you actually adapt and transform that which is learning, the mind itself. And so we look
brilliant
at...
example of skillful means, Brett.
Thank you. Yeah, we really love translating into modern, the modern dialect or the orange dialect, because in our experience, that's where the power and the influence is in the world. And so let's speak their language. And we're very passionate about that. So back to this idea of how we approach it, and the practice-based approach is, we were martial artists. I had got my pilot's license when I was a teenager. I have some idea of what it takes, this idea of long-term practice or, you know, deliberate practice and, you know, integral practice, as our, you know, pioneering minds before us showed us. And so it was just obvious that if we were going to do leader development, if we wanted people to grow in their capacities, both in a horizontal and vertical way, then what we had to do is we had to create practices that people would engage in, and we would introduce at the quarterly workshops, but they would practice every single day for 52 weeks. And in between the workshops, they would be on a teleclass. They would be talking with their executive coach in this particular in the integral leadership program. There's one-on-one executive coaching, and then. And so, they're getting together on the teleclasses. They're getting together with their executive coach one-on-one for mentorship and tutoring and coaching. And then they also are constantly in touch with one another, and we take classes through with a maximum of 22 people so that there's a real intimacy. It's a practice community. We form a practice community, and we very deliberately try to nurture that to be very rich and very intimate. And they have, an online and an email component to it. So they're literally thinking about these practices every day. So they're not going to a seminar and then, 8 weeks after the seminar, they've already forgotten 80% of it. And that's some of the statistics suggest that's what happens with many forms of seminar learning that are not practice-based. So we use the workshop simply to kind of inspire them and prepare them for practice. We basically share case studies, give some demonstrations, give them a chance to drill and practice a few times before they leave the workshop, and then they have 12 weeks with all kinds of accountability, and they have to fill out game filming reports. That's another orange metaphor we use, game filming, which comes from sports, and that's our term that we use for reflective contemplative methods, of which we teach numerous, and we put them all as various types of game filming. So when people are doing this, what we've basically done is kind of baked in the subject-object move, if you will. So all the 21 practices that we teach, and it depends on how you slice them, it's right around 21, because there's sub-practices underneath the core practices. But all the practices have a subject-object move built in. And so I would say that these 21 practices that make up the style of integral leadership that we teach in the academy, I would say that they're Trojan horses. That's what I would say.
Right.
So you have to remember that these are executives. Almost all of them are CEOs, $20 million, $50 million, $100 million businesses with hundreds of employees, in some cases thousands. These are folks that go to the country club. These are folks that play golf. They have a certain kind of, if you want to say, modern or orange lifestyle, let's say that. And one of these guys, back before we started Stegen, who I was coaching at the time, that's how I got my start in all this, I was doing coaching with these same types of personalities. And one of them told me a story that just stuck with me, and it's informed my work 15 years later. And he went to one of these expensive I think it was a Nautilus store back in the day, it's a long time ago, kind of deck out his home gym. And he asked the salesperson, he was looking at all these multi-$1,000 systems for exercise equipment, and he asked the salesperson, which one of these should I buy? And the salesperson said to this guy, my client, the one that you'll use.
Mm.
And so when Rand and I started the academy, you know what we said? We understand our folks. They're pretty much all achievers, and these are people that care about learning and that have a good heart. In many cases, they want to go beyond achievement to significance, but they may not know the pathway to get there. Let's build practices and tools that they will use. So we create the gold-plated golf club of integral practices, and we create a very sticky, like the Heath Brothers, sticky practice with a catchy name, cool visuals that's really easy to understand. We make it so that even if you're a beginner and you do it badly, you're still going to get results, and you're still going to be more successful engaging your decision-making, your team meetings, your ways of interacting with others, ways of giving feedback, ways of trying to motivate and influence people, all the usual things that a leader would do in business. We give them these practices and tools that if you do it this way, within a few weeks, once you get over the awkward phase of a new practice, even if you're doing it kind of badly and you're a beginner, you're still going to get better results than if you use a conventional approach. And so the example, many of our listeners are familiar with this amazing model, the ladder of inference. We teach them the ladder of inference, but the practice is not called the ladder of inference. The practice is called telling ourselves stories. And we teach them how to climb the ladder in their own mind of how they're taking in information, they're selecting certain information, they are making certain assumptions and generalizations, and they're using that to draw conclusions, and then they're taking action based upon that. And they understand that those beliefs that they form kind of reinforce the information they notice next time. So that's a 60-second version of the ladder of inference. We teach them how to climb the ladder consciously. That's step one of our Stegan practice called telling ourselves stories. Climb the ladder consciously. Be aware that you're making assumptions. Be aware that you're selecting data. Be aware that you're drawing conclusions based upon those assumptions and that selected data. Just do it consciously, you know, and understand in your mind the difference between a fact and an interpretation. And so they really come into working in their own mind with this way of working with interpretations. And right there, that's pretty huge. And then we give them a practice which we call the check-in. And any time you are dealing with a situation where you have different opinions, if there's any conflict, if there's a breakdown of some kind, if maybe you have a very different point of view than somebody else, especially if you feel that you're right and the other person's made a mistake, but they have a different point of view, we give them this practice called the check-in, and here's where the name of the practice comes from. So remember, the name of the practice is telling ourselves stories, one of the 21 core practices for integral leadership as we teach it. What they do is they say, Michael, hey, you know that conversation that happened about this project we're planning, and it was a little bit heated, and you ended up making the decision to go the direction that you're going? Well, the story I'm telling myself is that you believe that Jane isn't qualified to be on the team. That's the story I'm telling myself. And I don't know if that's true or not, but I wanted to check in with you on that, kind of get your perspective and then perhaps share my perspective. So tell me more about that, Michael. And so by using the term telling ourselves stories, even if they botch everything, but they use the phrase, the story I'm telling myself, it disarms the other person, and it telecasts in a very obvious way that what I'm about to say, I know that it is an interpretation because I'm framing it as a story. And so that's just one example. We've got 21 of those. And they're sticky practices. And what happens is, the reason that they're a Trojan horse is, if you are a leader and you adopt these practices of integral leadership, such as this one, and you begin to use this, you're not going to get any transformation. You're not going to have vertical development. You know, you're not going to go to a seminar and learn a practice and practice it for 12 weeks and you've moved up in your complexity in that developmental line. No, that's not going to happen at all. It takes years to do vertical development. But here's the amazing thing. It's a gold-plated putter. If it's your favorite putter, you're going to reach in and use that putter every time you're in that situation. And therein lies the Trojan horse component. We're providing practices to people that they get immediate better results horizontally using these practices than they were getting before. And therefore, they keep doing them. And lo and behold, if you do these practices, and they all have game filming and subject-object move and self-reflection and introspection built in, almost like a form of meditation, but a very kind of westernized kind of executive version of that. So if you're doing these practices for 1 or 2 years to the point that they just become internalized and it's just part of your natural way of thinking, communicating, and behaving, and if it is a developmental practice that's transformational in nature, a form of integral transformative practice, which all of these are, what's going to happen over 2 or 3 years, assuming you don't have arrested development, assuming you're either, or closed development, if you're open and you're basically a person who is growing, over time those seeds sprout. And that's what we're seeing after 1 year, 2 years, 5 years. I mean, we have people in our alumni community that graduated, 10 years ago from the Integral Leadership Program, and they're still doing those practices. And for some people, it takes like 5 years, and we're like, you know what? I don't really have much hope for that person. I don't think they're ever going to really see the light. And then 5 years later, they've like started some sustainability fund, and this was a person who was running billions of dollars worth of funds in all kinds of industries like oil and gas, and now they're like, in green tech or something. And there's like this delayed reaction because I think these practices are Trojan horses. And I think that is itself an example of integral leadership. What do you think?
Sure. No, absolutely. You know what? When I'm thinking about this from the conference attendees' perspective, here we are about to do the Integral Leadership Collaborative. Brett Thomas is going to provide a keynote.
my gosh, you know, talk about sophistication and talk about groundedness. You're going to bring a lot of really, really incredible value to these folks. What are you hoping to share with the conference attendees?
Well, that's the second provocative idea that that really has captured my imagination this past year, since Russ and I have been working on this book. In the Integral Leadership Program at Stegen, we have a year to slowly, in a very sequential way, week after week, month after month, over the course of 12 months, add more and more practices and more information, and then bring them into things like worldviews and understanding people in different leadership styles and how to deal with people that, for example, have a green worldview or a pluralistic worldview as opposed to people that, and so on. And so after about 10 years of teaching integral leadership, it occurred to me that we have to find a way to, you know, incorporate and acknowledge the developmental nature of these frameworks, but do it in a way that would be very skillful, that wouldn't be off-putting for people that read a book. And unlike going through 12 months, they're probably going to read that book in 12 days, you know, or a few weeks. We already had something that was working very, very well in how we teach integral leadership using mindsets and worldviews, but we needed to kind of take it to the next level. And I guess necessity is the mother of invention. Out of that came an insight, and we've been using this at Stegen now for like a year and a half, and this is a big part of the book. It's kind of the, if you will, maybe the central idea of the book, and then all the practices kind of build around this. And here's the idea. What if there was a Rosetta Stone of leadership? So let me explain what that means. So I think most people know what the Rosetta Stone is, but, you know, the Rosetta Stone was, of course, an ancient Egyptian artifact, this giant stone. And on this stone, same information was inscribed in three different languages, hieroglyphs, Demotic, and Greek. So once modern humans discovered this, then it allowed the researchers to decode those other languages, especially the Egyptian hieroglyphs, for the very first time. So the Rosetta Stone then is something that is an unlocking key for something that it was previously difficult or impossible to decipher. And that is exactly my experience when Russ and I went through all of these books on leadership theory. I'm sitting in my office and I'm looking at hundreds of books on leadership theory, you know, strategic leadership or collaborative leadership or authoritarian leadership. For the most part, all the books on leadership theory are written by people subject to a worldview and not an integral worldview. So there are people that write books on leadership theory that are subject to a traditional worldview. And there are people that write books on leadership theory that are subject to a modern worldview. That is their worldview. So it informs how they define leadership and how they define the best types of leadership and what works best. And the same with postmodern. There's a lot of folks that are writing books on leadership that are subject to a pluralistic worldview. So they think that, and they write, well, the best type of teamwork is self-managed teams. The best type of leadership is, you know, decentralized, and you treat everybody as an equal. And so that's what they will say. And so there'll be these strong advocates for example, transformational leadership or what we call collaborative leadership. But folks that are subject to a traditional, a modern, or a postmodern worldview rarely take into account that not everybody shares that worldview. And there are people, for example, that have a different worldview, a different style. They're at a different place in their own lives, and education and age and level of development and all those things, culture, circumstances, in which they actually might need authoritarian leadership. They might actually respond to autocratic leadership. And the real train wrecks happen when you have, for example, the folks that are advocates of with a pluralistic worldview that are advocates of transformational leadership or what I call collaborative leadership. We could even just call it green leadership. And they're advocating using self-managed teams and treating everybody as an equal and be completely authentic and admit when you don't know, admit when you're afraid, be completely upfront and vulnerable about all your fears. And then what if you go and apply that with folks that are kind of have a blue worldview and they're very traditional and, you know, they think in terms of black and white and they fully expect that their leader never admits they're wrong, their leader has all the answers. Their leader is viewed as a benevolent parent figure who's going to, you know, kind of protect them and save them and show the way. And it's totally demoralizing. So we've seen folks try to use green leadership, what I call collaborative leadership, with folks that have a tradition, you know, Max Weber back in the 40s, and then later James McGregor Burns, and then after that, you know, the great proponents of transformational leadership, Bernard Bass and Bruce Avolio, they've all created this distinction between transactional leadership and transformational. Transformational good, transactional bad.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a very integral view, because is there a place for transactional leadership? Most of my coaching clients that are CEOs are very good at transactional leadership, and in fact, most of their employees are money motivated and themselves have an achiever mindset and have an orange or modern worldview, and actually transactional leadership is extremely effective in certain situations. And
sure.
So it's not a very valorizing name of the style of leadership, so just in an effort to use skillful means, we call it strategic leadership. Sort of, we call orange leadership styles and approaches strategic leadership. So what if there was a Rosetta Stone? Of course, integral leadership would be, you know, what that would be about. What if there was a Rosetta Stone that could decipher which language people are speaking? Are they speaking a traditional dialect? Are they speaking a modern dialect? Are they speaking a postmodern dialect? Which worldview do they have? And which style of leadership will serve them, will motivate them, will engage them, will give them a sense of meaning? And that's when we came up with the concept of the leadership Rosetta Stone. If you take an integral approach to leadership, you can see that, broadly speaking, this is kind of a little bit of oversimplification, but perhaps a orienting generalization. It turns out that you could kind of, as a generalization, situate these different styles of leadership, and there's hundreds of styles of leadership out there, but you could situate them in what, in the leadership Rosetta Stone, we call the four universal styles of leadership. There's a red style of leadership. We call that autocratic. The person with the most power leads via command and control. There's a blue. We use the values colors rather than the altitude colors very deliberately. So I'm using the values colors here with a nod to Don. There's a blue style of leadership. We call that authoritarian leadership. The person with positional authority leads via chain of command. And then there's a orange style of leadership that works best with folks with an orange mindset. We call that strategic leadership. The person with the most expertise leads via strategic planning and tangible incentives. And then there's a green style of leadership for folks that have a more green sensibility, and we call that collaborative leadership. Some people call it transformational leadership, but we prefer the term collaborative leadership for the way we teach this. And leadership is not vested in any single person. Rather, consensus-based, self-managed teams lead themselves, right? And it turns out that if your followers and you're leading a group of people that have more of a red or a blue or whatever sensibility to them, if you as an integral leader can discern that, and if you have the versatility to actually use a more of an autocratic leadership style in that circumstance, or a more authoritarian leadership style or in that circumstance, and so on, the results are astonishing.
Mm-hmm.
And we're teaching folks that are diplomats and experts and achievers to do this, and it works.
Right.
And here's the most, perhaps the nicest thing about this. When people learn the leadership Rosetta Stone, we teach these different worldviews and mindsets as lenses, colored contact lenses, literally. We teach them as colored contact lenses. And you might have an orange contact lens that you're seeing the world through, and so you think the world is orange. You think the world is a modern world. But actually, you're seeing a modern world through an orange contact lens, and we teach them how to take off their kind of home-based natural contact lens and then see the world through a blue contact lens or a green contact lens or even a red contact lens. And we actually require them to take field trips to go and immerse themselves in red cultures and situations Or green, boy, they love that. A lot of our orange clients, you know, we like
oh, yeah.
we take them to like, you know, sweat lodges and ecstatic dancing, and you know, all the, it's really fun. But what they do is they start to hang out with people that have different worldviews and start to see through those lenses. And here's another Trojan horse. So we call the practice
right.
understanding people.
Right.
The practice is called understanding people, and it's recognizing people's mindsets, and then recognizing what leadership style is best paired with that mindset, and then learning to use that leadership style, speaking that dialect, using those leadership approaches. What happens is their exclusive identification with their narrow worldview, modern or traditional,
yeah.
breaks apart because they're constantly trying on these different lenses, and they're working with people and getting to know people and really getting to connect with and appreciate why a traditionalist values conformity so much, or why a person with a pluralistic worldview values equality so much. So instead of looking down upon it when those perspectives emerge, they've learned to appreciate those perspectives. Yeah, my sister's very pluralistic too. Yeah, boy, my father's really traditional. I understand that point of view, that conformity and, you know, good versus evil. And then what happens, of course, is that expands their worldview and what they're really doing. And several people are going to talk about polarities, much more qualified than me, at the conference. But it's almost like they're taking the positive of the different worldviews and trying to integrate those instead of defining the other worldviews that they're not with the negative or the unhealthy version. And so they're actually integrating their worldviews even as they're practicing understanding people. And here's the Trojan horse. They think, oh, I'm learning how to motivate people. But what it actually is you're actually expanding your worldview. And in doing that, you can be more motivating because you understand people's motivations.
Right.
So that's the leadership Rosetta Stone and kind of in a nutshell. What do you think about that?
Well, it's fantastic. You know, I was thinking one other element of this Trojan horse that you're doing, which is you're actively helping them reintegrate potentially non-integrated
exactly.
previous memes. And that creates much more healthy functioning wherever they are.
That's our experience. Our experience
yeah.
integral is to be integral wherever you are. To be integral means to integrate the best of the worldviews and the perspectives that you can. And so, so for example, if you can integrate orange and green, that's, to me, very integral. If a person
yeah.
equally, you know, all the positives of an orange worldview and all the positives of a green worldview and minimal of the unhealthy or negative, so all the healthy parts of it is minimal unhealthy, and you integrate that together, that's a really skillful leader. And that is impressive integral leadership. And they don't need to be, for example, in my opinion, you know, teal or turquoise or any of these things to be able to do integral leadership. You know, it's about being integral, and Zach is going to speak a lot about this. He's a huge advocate of integral at any stage. Integral means to be integrated to whatever degree you can integrate what has emerged for you at that point. And so as integral as possible at you know, wherever you are. And that's it seems to be working, Michael. It seems to be working.
Well, Brad, what a gift you and Stegan and now this Integral Leadership Collaborative are bringing to so many. So thank you. Thank you for this interview, and thank you for bringing
it. It's my pleasure.
Incredible. I think that folks who come to hear your keynote are going to just walk away with tremendous value. And you know me, I'm greatly appreciative of the value you provide, Brett. So thank you so much.
It's always good to talk with you, Michael. Thanks for this opportunity.
No problem.